All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you why the Cowboys might have to get rid of one of their biggest stars.
And Frank Caliendo will join the show. Y'all don't want to miss that. But we start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got today?
Man, in 1856, Marcellus, Abraham Lincoln popularized the cliche, actions speak louder than words. In 2019, at the height of the social media fraudulence and virtue signaling, President Lincoln's expression is even more profound and relevant. The ability and willingness to evaluate actions is the key to discerning truth. According to social media and the sports talking heads, Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson had a promising rookie season and established himself as a future franchise quarterback. In February, celebrated quarterback critic and Pro Bowl cornerback Jalen Ramsey heaped praise on Lamar, calling him the truth and doubling down on his assertion that Lamar should have been the number one pick in the 2018 draft. Anyone who has the audacity to state the obvious about Jackson, he's a severely limited passer, and the black Tim Tebow, is shouted down as racist. Well, I wonder if NFL receivers are racist too, because according to Baltimore head coach John Harbaugh, certain receivers don't want to play with Lamar Jackson. At the NFL's owner meeting earlier this week, Harbaugh outlined the difficulties of attracting free agent wide receivers to play in the Ravens' run-centric offense.
You're not going to be a certain type of receiver when I come play in Baltimore. You know, we have not received phone calls from some guys. That's okay. I don't want to hear from those guys. You know, and we want rough guys. We want tough guys.
Let me translate Harbaugh's words. We want receivers who love to block and don't care about catching footballs or going to the Pro Bowl or improving their leverage, their contract leverage. We're looking for undersized offensive tackles. Give us a call if you know it. See, what's going on with the Ravens this offseason are actions that reveal the truth about Lamar Jackson. NFL players talk among themselves, and what's being said about Jackson privately is quite different from what is said publicly. The Ravens have just four receivers on their current roster. Two of them have no experience. Only one of them, Willie Snead, is a legit NFL starter. There's a lot of opportunity to get on the field in Baltimore at the receiving position. No one's interested. That says an awful lot about Lamar Jackson. It says a lot more than the fraudulent praise that is showered on him over social media and on the talk shows looking for social media approval. Take a listen to John Harbaugh's sales pitch to NFL receivers.
The counterargument I would make to the naysayers are is because of the offense we're going to run and the skills of the quarterback that we have, you're going to get more open. You're going to be more wide open. And if you're the kind of guy that wants to catch a ball and go run for a touchdown, if that's something that appeals to you as a wide receiver, then maybe Baltimore is a place you ought to think about.
Let me translate that for you. We're drawing up a lot of gimmick plays to get our receivers wide open because Lamar isn't good at throwing into tight windows like other QBs. The slogan for the Ravens this year, we got more flea flickers than a dog pound. The actions of NFL receivers this offseason tell you everything you need to know about Lamar Jackson. Trust what you see and not what you're being told by people looking for retweets and likes. Lamar Jackson is Tim Tebow with a suntan.
Tebow!
Joining the desk now are a couple of former Pro Bowlers, TJ Houspenzada and Sean Merriman. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes.
John Harbaugh's words here, a bad sign for Lamar Jackson and his future as a franchise quarterback.
I don't think it's a bad sign. What I think it is a bad class of receivers out there. And it's interesting if you talk about Lamar Jackson, the prospect, the work in progress. We understand that he is a project, but they've already started to fund and invest in this project. And if you're a receiver out there, let's just look at these names. Cole Beasley, oh yeah, scary. John Brown, Randall Cobb, Jamison Crowder, Devin Funchess, Adam Humphries, Dante Moncrief, Cordarrelle Patterson.
Heard of all of them.
Heard of all of them. Now, I ain't heard of any of them last year getting 1,000 yards, though. Did you?
Heard of all of them.
That's why they free agents.
Not only are they free agents, but they couldn't cash in because to the level that they want to because they are – works in progress is some of them guys as well. So it's funny we're going to put the indictment on a Lamar Jackson when in reality, who are we talking about that these receivers that don't want to play with him? Those guys right there are not the top-level receivers. Top-level receivers, were traded during the season, Amari Cooper, were traded during the offseason, and you talk
you
about
– any of them want to play with Lamar?
Huh?
You think any of them want to play with Lamar?
I'm not going to get to speculation. All I'm going to say is the ones who had an opportunity, all ones that had an opportunity, I don't think neither one of them wanted to see each other because those guys need to work on some of their game as well.
You know, if I'm a wide receiver and I'm on the market, I'm looking at what Odell got paid, what some of these big guys got paid, and know that if I go to the Ravens, I never have an opportunity to make this type of money. Never. Because you're not going to get the ball. You are secondary to everything else going on. The Ravens are already telling you what they're going to do. They went into offseason. They got Mark Ingram. They're going to run the ball. Mm-hmm. They beefed up their defense with Earl Thomas. They're going to play great defense. And that's success for a winning team. That's not success for a big wide receiver to get paid. So I don't see anything wrong with it. If I was them, I you know, it's no different if I was a pass rusher. If you're going to drop me in a 3-4 scheme and make me cover the flats, I want to play for you. I want to get the quarterback. Those are the guys who get paid. So a wide receiver, this would not be my first choice. This would be a team that I'll be okay with because we're going to win some games. But I know that I'll never see that contract or never see a big contract than some of these other guys got.
So if he wants the number one, no top receiver is going to go play with Lamar Jackson, not because of what he's saying. It's how look at the film last year. Just look at the games he played in and how often receivers got the ball. They didn't get the ball. So you can't – now, if you're going – Tyrell Williams, who I probably thought – he was the best free agent receiver, in my opinion, just from a talent perspective. He was the best one.
Right.
If the Ravens would have given him a better contract than the Raiders had, oh, he'd be with the Baltimore Ravens.
I'm not sure.
They're not going. Sean is saying, oh, you can't go to the Baltimore Ravens and put up statistically the type of numbers you need to say, this is the type of contract I want and deserve. The Ravens would have to give you that money. Not one receiver is going to voluntarily say, I want to go play with Baltimore. We're going to throw the ball 20 times a game, and out of those 20 throws, probably 15 are going to the tight ends and the backs.
Right.
Nah, I can't do it.
And that's the makeup of this organization. Like, even in their greater years, we talk about when they had the vaunted defense and they went out there and they pounded
with 12 points a game.
Jamal Lewis down your throat. Right. And then
They tried to change it. When you give Flacco that contract, you're saying we want to be a throwing team. Oh, I don't know if he can do that, so we'll pull back a little bit.
But did they – when – with Flacco, they attracted some wide receivers. Steve Smith, I think Anquan Boldin spent some time there.
Anquan's a big body who can also block and do other things.
You know? I get it, but when have we ever heard a coach go on record?
He knows, though, Jason. Harbaugh knows. Well, the style of offense we about to run, man, he knows.
And again, because he understands the game, he goes, the receivers have their agents reach out to you, blah, blah. Everybody knows there's a need in Baltimore, but they're not even calling. You can't tell me that doesn't say – that says something about their style of offense, but it also says something about Lamar. Yes? No?
No, well, look, he's still developing, just like he did at Louisville. Despite him winning the Heisman, despite him looking amazing, there were still issues with his game, especially in the pocket. But then if you look at his numbers and you dive deeper, completion percentage went up every single year. So during that developmental process, who wants to jump on board and say, hey, I'm going to hitch my wagon to somebody who's developing? LeBron came to the Lakers and looked at this young core that was developing that was even more mature than this.
Patrick Mahomes is still developing.
And then guess what he said? Bye.
Patrick Mahomes is still developing.
Is that developing or is that already?
That's the
MVP.
Shined up.
That's the MVP in the second year. Don't call those the same by birth certificate. Those are different things. There's a pass play. I went to the L.A. Charger Baltimore Raven game, and I remember when he threw this pass
to the tight end,
out of play action, which is their style, to Mark Andrews. It was a 68. What's this pass?
It was a great
dude can't
but
throw.
See, the key in the bucket, is Marcellus.
Look at that. Come on, brother.
Can he consistently do it?
That's the progress.
Yeah. If he can consistently do it, now we working with some. But
I
you
can
have
show
to show
you some Tebow highlights to look good, too.
And some winning games. You're right there.
Right.
You say Tebow, and you think I'm going to take that as a negative. I think that is a positive. Tebow won games. Just didn't look
like a franchise quarterback.
I understand that. He wasn't given the proper leash. And it didn't look the part. I understand it. But that's not Lamar Jackson.
And the game has changed a ton since Tebow has been out of the league as far as implementing a lot of college. Terminology and play. It's changed a ton.
I'm just surprised that he come out publicly about it more than anything else. Like, if I'm him and I'm trying to sell guys coming through, I'm not going to let the entire NFL know and the public know that we got a problem bringing guys here because he just kind of shot himself in the foot. He's saying that guys don't want to come here because they know what we're going to do, and he reassured everyone that they're going to run the ball and they're going to do those things.
Let me give you another theory, because this is what I believe happened. And again, you know, there's always the real truth, and then there's the truth that coaches let out publicly. I don't think John Harbaugh's ever been really on board with Lamar Jackson. He ran Lamar Jackson to get into the playoffs and to get a contract extension. Now he's got his contract extension. Now he can move on to what he really thinks. And like, damn, we've committed to a quarterback and an offense. It's going to be hard to get certain guys.
Buyer's remorse?
No. I buy some of that, what you're saying, but I think he's shifting the pressure because he responded to the no contract situation. He responded to they were starting off with a losing season under Joe Flacco, and he responded. The team responded. Now the challenge is not I'm selling this to y'all out there. I'm telling my team it's time to have on this challenge flag and this underdog mentality that we have to respond to this because there are critics out there. There are naysayers saying you can't throw the football.
Why couldn't respond. Why couldn't he also, again, you think he's speaking to the whole team. Maybe he's speaking to his quarterback.
He is. That's what I'm saying.
No, but yes. Specifically, like, hey, man, we're having a problem getting guys here. Are you doing the work necessary? And we've heard reports he's down in Florida throwing the football, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Harbaugh couldn't even name the specific guy.
And now you can't name specific receivers you want in the free agent market either because those guys are not difference makers. By talent.
I can go by Harbaugh's words, though. Mm-hmm. He would have liked some of those guys to reach out to the Ravens. That's just a fact. He's basically saying nobody wants
if they show them the money, they'll be there. Exactly. If they
money
show
talk.
Them the money,
you know
they'll
what?
Be there.
The money is not going to be in a big-name wide receiver because that's not going to be the bulk of their offense. And every young quarterback that I played against, how you cover that up is having a good running game and a great defense. Damn. If they didn't bring in Earl Thomas or make
Mark Ingram,
if they didn't bring these guys in, I would say they believe in his arm. By them bringing in what they did is showing me that every young quarterback is having problems throwing the ball to their wide receivers. Okay, we're going to have to rely on the defense a little bit more. We're going to have to rely on the running game until our quarterback comes around. So no matter what he says, he's already showing us because there was wide receivers there. We just named Bradford. 10 of them. Yeah. We named 10 of them that they could have grabbed anyone off of it, but their philosophy and their, you know, going forward isn't in a wide receiver. So if I'm a wide receiver now, why would I come there? You already showed me what the future of this team is.
But if you're a good receiver and you go to Baltimore, it's going to be very easy. We're going to get press man. I got to win. Whether I get the ball or not, if I show that I can consistently get open for Lamar Jackson, the reads are going to be very defined. It's not going to be no exotic coverage. We're going to put 8 guys in a box. We're going to stop the run. We're going to force you to throw the ball. Everything is going to be pretty simple for him to figure out, what is the defense
like your
doing?
Point, TJ.
Very easy.
Very easy. You're giving me a different way to look at his deal because he is saying, look, man, everybody's going to commit to stop the run. If you're a good wide receiver, you're going to be wide open.
All you got to do is beat press coverage. Safety in the middle of the field. If you can't beat press coverage, you shouldn't be in the NFL.
Yeah, but it's a consistency because I was at that game too. Lamar Jackson had another ball he threw out the back of the end zone, which shocked me. I didn't know he had that type of arm in him. And it was an incomplete pass, but I couldn't believe he was able to throw it the way he did. It was just a little bit too far for the wide receiver. So I know he has the arm. It's the consistency is going to be the problem going forward. There's no doubt he can get a guy the ball once or twice. I mean, he's an NFL quarterback. He should be able to. But can he consistently go out week in and week out?
That's the key. Can he consistently throw the ball with accuracy?
Hey, guys. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, then you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show.
Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houspenzada, and Sean Merriman are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Philadelphia, where the Eagles pushed all their chips in on Carson Wentz this offseason, letting their savior of the last couple of seasons, Nick Foles, walk in free agency. But even before Foles left town, reports popped up that all was not well between Wentz and his teammates, which Wentz acknowledged after the season, and even Doug Peterson seems to agree that his quarterback has room to improve.
I think being a better teammate would just be, you know, being maybe a little more, sometimes being a little more vulnerable, you know, being a little more accessible. You know, you're obviously committed to your craft and developing your skill, but, you know, it's like you want to walk across the aisle and talk to the other side, and that's all part of a maturation process and a growth process, and you know, it's something that you learn through time. And I watched it with some of the greatest quarterbacks I've ever played with. I saw it through Dan Marino. I saw it through Brett Favre. And guys that, you know, for them to become better teammates, they embrace the entire team and take on that personality, and then people follow it. Carson's got that. He's got that in him. He's got it in his DNA, and that's what we're excited about.
Wow. NFL coaches are being very honest this offseason. Mm. This is cut from the same cloth as Harbaugh being honest. This clearly to me, Doug Peterson saying, man, he's going to have to change his leadership style and reach out to the entire locker room. And I like the point he made about Brett Favre, because Brett Favre was a good old boy. Mm-hmm. But everybody in that locker room loved Brett Favre.
Right.
Whether you was from the hood or whether you was from the sticks like him, he knew how to connect. Carson Wentz from the sticks, he's going to have to learn how to reach across the aisle.
Look, he's being honest, and he's also stating the obvious. Now, Carson Wentz has had some support from guys across the aisle. Fletcher Cox comes to mind, the people who have supported him. But what he's talking about is what we've all witnessed, which has been the Philly way the last 2 years. There's some lightning in the bottle that Nick Foles was able to capture that went beyond the tangibles to the intangibles, and it rallied this team 2 consecutive years. One time they won the championship. So now he's looking at Carson Wentz, and he's like, dude, when you're healthy, you're a baller. When you're healthy, you check all the boxes in terms of the tangibles. But the intangibles, that's where we have room to improve, because we know that energy's in the building. If it was just once, then we would say, okay, a one-off. But it happened again. So now that guy's gone, and we have invested in you. It's your turn to find that same bottle that somehow, some way, Nick Foles continues to find in this building, and make sure you get all you can out of your teammates.
You know, they're two different type of players, Nick Foles and Carson Wentz, but I'm a firm believer that leaders are born and not made. You know, you see some of these young guys coming in the NFL, and you can tell right away when they're going to be a leader. They come in and take control of the locker room. They come in taking control of the huddle.
Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, they come in mm-hmm. right away. Now, they'll learn the different coverages. They'll learn to watch film. They'll learn these other things. That comes with growth. But you can tell when a young guy they come in the locker room and they're ready to go right away. Carson Wentz isn't that guy. He's just not that way. Not only you can tell, from Nick Foles being on the field and tell the two difference in the attitudes, the body language, when Nick Foles is playing, guys seem a lot more happier. We've heard at least 4 or 5 different occasions of players coming out saying something about Carson Wentz and the way he reacts to his teammates in the locker room. I just don't believe this is going to change. I believe he just needs to handle things differently. I also believe that because he wasn't on the field and he was injured, it's really hard to be a leader when you're hurt. Mm-hmm. You're asking the guy to lead your team and get everybody on the same page, but he's not even on the field. So he might have been dealing with something else, and I can tell you that when you're injured and you're away from the team, it is a lonely place.
Right. They don't want to hear you barking
at
them.
They don't want to.
You ain't balling.
You can't start to yell at your team. You can't tell them to pick it up. You just feel almost like you're in the outskirts and you're not part of the team because you hurt and you can't contribute to your team. So I do believe that has something to do with it. I don't believe Carson Wentz is going to change because I believe that's who he is.
Mm. So this how I see it is very similar. Is you say the coaches are being honest. Coaches are seeing what's happening in Pittsburgh, and they're going to nip this in the bud right now. We're not going to make like our quarterback is better than everybody else. We're going to do things the right way. And if I got to come out to the media and say it and you have to change, then so be it, because we're going to nip this in the bud before it gets going. 2017 and 2018, Carson Wentz was hurt. You're withdrawn from the team. You're kind of alienated. It's hard to lead when you're not in the huddle. You can, I'm the leader of the team. When you're not playing, you're not in the meetings, you're not on that field, you can't lead. Guys are going, well, you ain't even playing. You ain't even practicing.
Right, right.
And so that happens. If he can consistently stay healthy, he'll be all right. The maturation, that will come naturally. He'll learn different guys. What he was saying is he's probably really cool with the offense, but he doesn't really deal with the defense.
No.
That will come.
I don't think his criticism has come from a couple of receivers. Remember, they think he favors John Ertz, the tight end.
Zach Ertz, the tight end.
But, TJ, this is where I think you can speak to it because, again, a lot of times that quarterback room and that receivers room, that's two different neighborhoods.
Very.
That's two different sides of the track.
Yeah.
And the quarterback who can go hang in the receivers room and maybe have a drink with him on Tuesday or Monday or whatever, that not every quarterback can deal with that. That's what I think.
So you know what needs to happen is this offseason, when they're in OTAs, Carson Wentz gets the receivers and they watch the practice together. They watch the practice together and he says, okay, this is what I was looking for on this route and this is what you did. You start to do that and that's building up cachet with the players. That's leadership right there. But you're just doing it because you want to win.
No. We need to hit the club together.
Yeah, that interdependent relationship.
You don't have to do that.
But it speaks volumes to the trust factor.
We can go out to eat. We can go out to eat. You ain't got to go to the club. Let's just go eat. We might go to the club after we eat. The problem is, you can go home.
Hold on. If you're comfortable in your skin and we understand you're different than us, but we respect you equally, you ain't got to come to the club with us.
Never.
But when you're distant or you're not coming across the aisle, as Coach said, you need to hit the club here and there just to let me know that you're not judging my side versus just loving your side.
Very much so. We have to spend some time outside of football together. We have to.
When I hear a coach say he's not vulnerable enough, that just shows me that he doesn't take the criticism. He's not opening himself to the rest of the team. Maybe he's shelling himself off. He's not going to hang out. He's not going to doing the OTAs and they're going to do offseason things together. You see Russell Wilson and some of these great quarterbacks who have the chemistry with their team, they go somewhere for the offseason. They work out somewhere completely different. They hang out during the offseason. That's not what he can do?
We Carson Palmer used to do this in Cincinnati. After training camp, he would have a big party at his house, invite the whole team. And he would do it twice a year, during the season and right before a training camp, invite the whole team. And so he can do things like that. And you're not going to interact with everybody, but you'll interact with certain guys. You do those
things.
He's on a rookie deal.
His house ain't that big.
Sometimes, Sean, I know you can relate to this. Hey, sometimes it's
here's a like, first pick.
It's like any true, relationship, true. Though. It's like any relationship with a woman or whatever. You may have to go some places with a woman that really isn't your thing, but you just let her know. I've been to a Kenny Chesney concert. Wasn't really my cup of tea, but I put on a smile and acted like
I enjoyed it.
You
got to swallow it real like, ah, I got to do this for you.
No, and I get that. Philip Rivers, we couldn't get him out to save our life. Like, he just wasn't the person that's out and about and doing anything. Everybody else, we got out at least one time. Like, that was my goal. I wanted to get everybody out at least one time. Yeah. We never got Philip out. But at the same time, whenever we had team functions or whenever we had team meetups or whatever we did, Philip was the one. He would come over and sit at the table no matter who was there. It could be all D linemen, all linebackers, right, all DBs. Philip would come over there and sit down in the middle of whoever it is and joke and laugh and do everything that we did. And I don't see that happening with Carson Wentz.
Okay.
No judgment.
When you did that with Philip Rivers, or what year was he in?
Philip Rivers would come down and rap whatever the latest rap song on there with radio.
But this is the key, though.
We'd have freestyle Friday.
Philip Rivers, he's present, though. He's present.
Carson Wentz has been absent,
alienated, because he's been hurt.
But at the same time, I've been there. I broke down the team or got in the huddle in street clothes before a game just to get the team hyped up. You can still be there. The problem is, and what I'm hearing from the coaches, he's just not vulnerable. He's not around the guys, so they don't have that relationship with him. You don't have to go to the club for that.
Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Husmanzadeh and Sean Merriman are back. Time to play some Survivor Island. All right, let's move to Dallas, where reportedly the Cowboys and DeMarcus Lawrence are at an impasse over a new contract. Despite Dallas raising their offer to 6 years and $120 million, Jerry Jones is also trying to figure out Dak Prescott's next contract, with some estimating he could have to shell out $30 million a year. And with other young stars like Ezekiel Elliott and Amari Cooper, it looks like Dallas is going to have a hard time keeping their young core together. Marcellus, if one of these four had to go, Zeke, DeMarcus Lawrence, Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, who you voting off the island?
Ladies and gentlemen, I must vote DeMarcus Lawrence. My own, what? The defensive end off the
That's
island.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, wow. I'm going to tell you why. Wow. One, he's not part of the trifecta. He's not a part of the offense, which Dak needs Zeke to help carry the ball, to protect him. Dak and Amari need each other so that they can have a great passing game. And last year in the NFL, the four best teams had the best scoring offenses.
Dallas won with defense.
Dallas got smoked by defense. You saw what happened to that top 10 defense with the 10.5 sacks DeMarcus Lawrence had against the Rams. Did you see how that played out? Yeah, you have to win in today's game by scoring more points.
Dallas won with defense, though.
Yeah, and they would have won more if they had better offense. You got to keep the offense intact and let that mature. Sorry, Deanne, but no go.
All right, Sean, who are you voting off?
Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott. You know what? It ain't even close. You talk about a top 10 defense last year. They wouldn't have been in the playoffs without that defense. Amari Cooper come in. He changed the whole dynamics of this offense.
Yeah. That's offense.
Ezekiel Elliott, the bread and butter of this offense. Without him, they're not doing anything.
Mm.
Dak Prescott is the only one that's replaceable out of this group. There's at least three quarterbacks on the market right now that can do what Dak Prescott did.
Man, you crazy. You crazy.
There's at least three quarterbacks.
You crazy.
There's at least three quarterbacks.
Name, Do I hear this?
Give me one.
Hey, Merriman, who has the second most wins behind Tom Brady since they came in?
Just
the
give
league?
Me one. Name one.
Who is that? Who is that?
But you know what?
What's
without,
name?
Without those wins, that defense wasn't there, Dak Prescott wouldn't do it. Prescott is an average quarterback.
You know what? He got the second most wins at the position.
There might be a little something extra in your cup.
It is. Vegas in me.
That's amazing.
I agree. I wouldn't pay Dak $30 million. That would be crazy. Yeah. I agree with you there. But he is a quarterback, Sean, in a league that's quarterback dependent. I would not pay him, but voting him off when I got these other options.
Give him a smaller tent on the island, a little itty bitty tent.
You just
a teepee.
You need somebody average to get Amari Cooper the ball and hand the ball off to Ezekiel.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
All right, now
well, for me, man. I sadly vote to evict DeMarcus Lawrence.
No! Yeah.
I sadly vote to evict.
I'm surprised you did it.
Number one, it's what Marcellus said. You got the quarterback, you got the running back, you got a receiver. He was my only choice. Mm-hmm. I had no other choice. Now, maybe if you put five guys in there, maybe he stays. But with the choices I have, he has to go. They just traded for Robert Quinn, so obviously the Cowboys might feel the same way as me and Marcellus do as well. So, given a defensive end, number one, he's been suspended, number one. He wants the type of money that he wants. I'm not paying a defensive end Khalil Mack money when I have three guys on the offensive side of the ball that I know I'm going to have to pay.
Yeah.
I have to pay them. I got to pay Zeke. I got to pay Amari Cooper. And I got to pay Dak Prescott. I'm not giving DeMarcus Lawrence $22, $23 million a year.
You know how hard it is to get double-digit sacks in the National Football League? You know.
Oh, I get it. And how many Super Bowl rings you got? Hey, me too.
It doesn't matter as much, man. How many sacks he has?
Reggie White.
You don't think that could be replaced with as many balls being
Super
thrown out?
Bruce Smith went to four
went
Super
to,
Bowls.
Went to him, yeah, but the impact. You can have four sacks and lose a game. You have no sacks and win a game.
If a quarterback throws four touchdowns, they're probably going to win.
Yeah, exactly. Go have four touchdowns to quarterback. You're winning that game.
All right, I probably got the craziest choice, but I truly believe it. Because it's a very hard choice.
Wow.
I would vote Zeke off.
You need a lot of time.
And I'm going to just tell you, it's a simple argument.
Go.
We listening.
If you go, who gets paid the most of these four positions? Quarterback, running back, defensive end, pass rusher, and wide receiver.
Quarterback.
The running back gets paid the least.
Yes.
Oh,
the running back gets paid. So the league has spoken about what has the least amount of value of these four positions.
So shouldn't you keep him because you're paying him the least?
He's going to be the cheapest. You can build around him.
If we're voting Survivor Island. The whole deal is about who's easiest to replace, what has the league valued. The league doesn't value the running back after what Todd Gurley just did in the playoffs. And again, Zeke, to me, is the most talented of all four of these guys.
Yes, exactly.
But he has the least amount of value.
They're going to put five in the box and make that him to beat him.
With the Dallas Cowboys, he actually is the most valuable on that team.
Yeah.
He's the most valuable.
Protecting Dak?
He's the most valuable on that team.
Giving Dak and Amari single coverage out there, you take away Zeke, boy, everybody dropping. Everybody dropping. It's 12 deep back there.
What happened with Todd? Did the Rams Todd Gurley went into the toilet. The Rams still made the Super
Bowl. But Ezekiel is a different animal.
He's Todd Gurley's not on the same level as Zeke.
No, this is what I'm saying. Todd Gurley has had surgeries and he's been hurt. Ezekiel Elliott, he ain't missing no games.
Except suspension.
Not from no physical ailment. He's not missing a game. He's available. He's there. When he's healthy, he's playing well. Todd Gurley was hurt, and so you look at it from that perspective. He's had an ACL surgery.
What did Le'Veon Bell just get paid this offseason? Less than what he thought. Man, that running back position. And again,
and they missed the playoffs.
Again, I'm someone.
They missed the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm someone. I like running backs. I get it. But the league has spoken about this position. I think it was a very simple
Don't you get more bang for your buck if he's lesser? And he's the best player, but he's going to cost the least.
That's what I think.
Oh, that sounds like value. You've been in the grocery store lately.
So is Amari Cooper love because he's the only one didn't get a vote?
I go to Whole Foods.
You go to Whole Foods?
Whole paycheck.
They don't say per ounce how much it costs because you don't know value. You got to go with Ezekiel.
I'm switching to Dak.
See, I'm with that. Hey, you know what? We sending Dak off with a paddle boat. We not even gonna give him a. We gonna just ship him.
We gotta go tiebreaker then, huh? Two Dak.
Two Dak.
Nah, I'm sticking with Zeke. All right, welcome back to the show, Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh's back.
Hit him.
There it is. Time for my favorite segment. Time to get antisocial.
Antisocial.
My man Darnell Smith back in Indianapolis. There was a death in his family. And filling in for Darnell is my friend and one of the funniest men in comedy and in sports television, Frank Caliendo.
Yes. Love him.
Staying in the house.
With the throwback jersey on, looking good.
Whitlocks.
Is this from Ball State Elementary School?
No, that is from Ball State circa 1988.
All right, and thank you for leading into my comedic bit with a family tragedy.
Thank you. From funeral to comedy. I was like,
tremendous.
What? What a segue.
All right, anyway, you guys ready to get going?
Frank's going to walk us through these Twitter streets. I'm so looking forward to it.
All right, I feel like I've been set up pretty well.
Streets. All right, let's go.
Let's get this going with John Gruden and the Raiders. I'm no Colin Cowherd, but I got a good impression for you, man. He traded one of I wasn't going to read this as Gruden, but now I feel like doing it. Who traded one of the best defensive players in the league, Khalil Mack, to the Chicago Bears last season, man? Mack definitely got the better end of the deal, bringing in a $141 million contract, and Gruden admitted this week that he cried for 3 days, man. More than I cried during The Lion King. I tell you what, following the blockbuster trade, he followed up that quote with, and get this on me close, I wanted to coach Khalil Mack. He knows that. You guys buying this?
I'm buying your impression, of course.
Man. I'll tell you what, man. I would have traded for 10 of you, man.
It would have been 10 of me to make up for one Mac.
Bro. I'm not buying this, to be honest. No, that he cried for 3 days after I'm not buying it.
Yeah, but he's just trying to show the emotional level. Like, it was a tough call to make, and he knew that it would help him get opportunities and get more players going forward, so you give up a lot, you get a lot. But, yeah, I think he was emotionally attached to the concept of coaching Khalil Mack. No.
When you're in charge and you want to do something, you do it.
Yeah.
If you want to coach him, you coach him.
Don't that, TJ.
That's the
Somebody gives you an offer, you can't refuse to buy your house. You love your house. You love everything about it. But it's like, at that price?
And what you going to do? Hopefully try to find a house that was comparable to that.
And he did. He tried to find four different players. He got Antonio Brown out of a Khalil Mack.
Who are you going to get to rush the passer like Khalil Mack?
That's not happening right now. It's not happening.
There we
go. But he's going to score more points.
So he probably didn't cry, but he probably will cry.
I tell you what, man, if that house could rush a passer, I'd buy that house right now, man. All right, moving on. Got to wait for the next.
Next.
All right, I'm moving on to some big ballers. Big baller brand, baby. We're going to go Charles Barkley, who Listen, Charles Barkley reminds me a lot of this show because he's honest, and the honesty is what I really care about. And this is a man who went out there during his NBA playing days and said, I am not a role model. And then he constantly proved it. So it set him up to be that person. And last year when he said, I want to punch Draymond Green in the face, which I'd never heard anything like that on television before. But his apology, and Jason, you were part of the apology.
Yeah.
He went, that was not an apology, but it was brilliant because it was something he could live with and it was honest. He went on and said, he basically said, I apologize for recognizing that Draymond Green has such a punchable face. That's That's not an apology. That's a cheat code. All right. It's no secret there's no love lost between Charles Barkley and LeVar Ball. Well, yesterday, Barkley shared his feelings about LeVar, saying, "This old big mouth jackass dad put his kid in an awkward situation all year. Like I said, I don't want to see anything bad happen to this kid, but I don't like his dad at all." Social media showed their support for Barkley's comments, praising him for telling it like it is and speaking his mind. Like Barkley putting LeVar Ball on blast?
I certainly do. I know one person at this desk who probably doesn't, but I liked it.
Oh, man, you know I love me some LeVar Ball. Overzealous, yeah, stepped in it a few times. I get it, but it was really done out of love. I mean, I don't like it when people say,
out of love of LeVar?
Love for his kids, too. Like, this is the one part that I know he loves his kids, and he always puts his kids first. The dude is from the hood, South Central, where we grew up, and moved to Chino Hills with a plan and a mission to be distant from all the issues to make sure he raised his family. There's a lot of people that maybe not, they can't do that, whether it's financially or mentally, just to say, my priority are these kids. He did that from birth, man. Respect that kid, man.
Number one, Barkley has a point, but LeVar Ball is a... their pops. Like, there's so many kids in inner city that don't have this. He want what's best for his kids. And did he go about it the wrong way? Did he have some missteps? Of course he did.
Oh, yeah.
I would rather, I've never met my dad. I don't know him. And so for you to have your dad present and working you through this, that's all you want. Mm. That's all you want. He made Lonzo famous before he ever got to the league just by running his mouth, but he put a target on him.
Yeah.
And so Barkley, he has a point, but I would like this.
It's a gift.
I wouldn't
and
mind
a curse.
This at all. It's a gift and a curse.
It got real over there. You stop it. Stop it.
Let's get back to the gridiron. Former Dallas Cowboys head coach Barry Switzer took to Twitter yesterday to reminisce about when he was offered the job from Jerry Jones, who is obviously the best owner, general manager, and first-time coach of, it doesn't matter what I'm saying, you know what it is, and I'll correct it inside your minds with some sort of telepathy. This drew a response from Dallas reporter Tim Collishaw, who said he and Ed Werner were in disbelief at the time. Switzer then complimented the two on being, quote unquote, pretty fair, while covering the team during the 1990s by saying, and this is important, quote, if Jerry had not made that call, never got to know your asterisk, or Ed. Anyways, thought you guys were pretty fair, only eat Ed's A. I think he meant to say chew his buttocks out. Yeah. One time, but he said it with eat, and that's just terrible. Love to see Jay Glazer report on this. That was unbelievable. I can't believe the guy just did that. Think about the things he says. Hey, you guys working out? Let's go work out together. I can actually bench press Jason Whitlock. Anybody ever seen that? Should I be Rain Man, E-Man the movie? Like, Whitlock was worried about me not having enough time. Listen, I can feel it. I can feel it. Just look at me. We'll go. Did you ever think of Demi Lovato? That was me. Knock my tooth out. We went viral, and not in the good kind of way, not the bad kind of way. You don't want to go bad way, kind of viral. Okay. So, out of time, let me know. I'm just talking to Morse code right now. Listen, I might have had too much workout juice. Hope all this is well. Hope all is well with you. That was the end of the quote. Who cares? Nobody even remembers what we're talking about.
Man.
Well, that got weird fast. Thoughts on Barry's Twitter game? Good, bad? You guys want to just work out?
I'm just going to say TMI. I'm not touching this. I want to keep my job. Barry Switzer needs
to work. Wait a second. You put me in there to read it?
He needs to work on his Twitter game.
Yeah, I don't know what he was trying to say.
Yeah, he lost me.
Yeah, I was gone. Move on.
So, but yeah, next!
You are.
Yeah.
In a recent podcast, Deion Sanders opened up about hitting rock bottom while he was in the league. Take a listen.
I had what the world would call success. And rock bottom for me was having 10 cars and one going nowhere. Rock bottom for me was having a 14,000 square foot house but never feeling at home. Rock bottom for me was laying between two and three women at a time, but you get up unsatisfied.
Doesn't sound so bad to me. What do you guys think?
That's the bottom?
Yeah, man, I'm with you, Frank, on that one.
That wasn't the bottom. I mean,
If that's the bottom,
guilty. But it wasn't the bottom.
If that's the bottom, what is the top?
I mean, man. You can label one person and come up unsatisfied.
Whoa. I'm gonna keep it real. I know exactly where Deion is coming from. Not from experience. I'm just saying that the things you think will give you great satisfaction often doesn't. Deion is a man of God.
Yes.
And he's come to the understanding that that wasn't satisfying.
But all he's saying is he found his inner peace, inner happiness. If you want to take him literally, that means everything outside of you can be looked at as good or looked at as bad. Money can be a great thing. Money can be a bad thing for you. You talking about his partying. It could be a good thing. You release. If you handle your job, your work, what is wrong with going out there? You know, work hard, play hard. So I understand where he's coming from, but at the same time, I don't know if that's bottom. He still was
for him in prime time.
I mean, for me, it's anybody that could be having some of these problems. He's saying this now. His position in the NFL, being one of the greatest players to ever play. Maybe he's saying this for somebody that needs to hear this and say, oh, this is me.
Yeah, they're masking all their issues.
But does President Trump have any more thoughts on this?
I just didn't say anything wrong. It sounded pretty good. It was tremendous. It's the number one way to go downhill. Let me just say that. And everybody knows it. All right. This is my last appearance with you guys. We're going to tweet about it. Oh, then you'll be antisocial for sure, Frank. Sticking with football, Mizzou quarterback Drew Locke is gaining more and more momentum after a decent 2018 season and a solid Senior Bowl. He also had a nice showing at his pro day with people around saying he has an it factor, drawing comparisons to the likes of Brett Favre. And this is just a way for you to force me into a John Madden impression. Is that a crazy comparison? There we go.
I've actually seen Drew Locke play.
Yeah.
I don't think he's Brett Favre.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, the evaluators, we get lazy. Everybody has to be somebody. Drew Locke is not close to Brett Favre, but at the same time, if you had to just go in the landscape, pick somebody, I can see the comparison. But
I like Drew Locke, though, in this draft.
I seen him play. I actually worked out with him heading up, getting ready for the combine. If he's compared to Brett Favre, then he's going to be great. So he should love that comparison.
Take it.
That was an excuse just for you to do John Madden.
I know what it was.
It worked.
All right, so now it's time for what we've all been waiting for, Frank Caliendo's question of the day. Take it away.
Who is Frank Caliendo? Ha, 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 ha. My question of the day.
And all right, Frank, take it away.
All right, I watched the show pretty closely. I have no idea what that means. Somebody wrote this for me, and I feel like I have a sense of who you guys are. I want to check my instincts. I've written down here in a card who I think your role models would be in football media. So, guys, let me ask you this. Who were your career role models?
Career role models? Yeah. Career. Okay.
Let me go first. Let me say.
My career is different than yours.
Mine's easy. I got what Mike Royko was a columnist for the Chicago Tribune.
Who's this?
When I was a kid, Mike Royko, a Pulitzer winning. Some people consider him the greatest columnist of all time.
Nice.
He was my role. I read his columns when I was a kid, and that's how I've tried to model my entire career after Mike Royko.
Okay. My mom, my dad, grandma, sister. Okay, let's get to the career ones. I wanted to be John Elway or Eric Dickerson. That was my, football role models. No broadcasting role models. I always tell you, I didn't know that this was a thing. When I retired, I was like, they have shows that's talking about us all day, every day. I didn't know. I was so distant from the media. But, yeah, John Elway, just Captain Clutch, how he was just always responding. Eric Dickerson, his style of running and how smooth he was out there. Those are two guys.
I really don't even like these type of questions because of the way I came up. I didn't have any. I didn't play sports really growing up until my last year in high school. So it sucks. But, once I started playing, go back to Deion, I spent some time with him, and I kind of liked his confidence, the way he played with. Mike Irvin was my favorite receiver once I started playing. But as far as role models growing up, y'all don't want to know my role models growing up because of the way I grew up, it was nobody in sports or TV.
TJ with the real.
And that was the upper end of Deion?
It was after the partying and the money,
All right, so I actually had to think about this a little bit, and I wanted to go a different way, because that's who I'd written down for all three of you. But I thought, I think about this, I watch Jason and wonder who he thinks he sounds like in his head, And I started to believe that Morgan Freeman is what's in his head. So I got something from a Whitlog. We got a little music. They're already going with it. Belichick is greater than Tom Brady. If I could only choose one, I choose Belichick. I stand by everything I said last week about Brady. He's the most dominant athlete of his era. He's the Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali of his time. But Brady isn't Belichick's equal. No way. Brady was average yesterday. He threw two picks and should have thrown a third. Belichick made Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce disappear. Belichick confused Patrick Mahomes with blitzes and coverages. Belichick is the primary reason the Patriots are in their ninth Super Bowl.
How does he do this?
In 18 years.
Unreal.
Belichick is why I feel like a clown today.
Dude, that's classic. That's
man,
good right there,
amazing.
Man.
Amazing.
And tell us, this is going to be like a little bit extra here. I actually, I feel, and this is going to start out as a compliment. You're going to get worried about it. It's kind of a little, make me feel like Barack Obama if he didn't know all the words he was saying.
Let me be clear. The vociferousness and the aforementioned objectivity are in perpetuity of, I went to Columbia. That makes me better than you, Jason.
And I didn't know TJ was going to be here. I thought, Jason and I went back and forth. I was like, I'll just throw something. I was just thinking Chris Rock just because. I can't believe TJ Housmanzada. Housmanzada. Sounds like a comedy bit from the early days of Abbott and Costello. Housmanzada. Third base.
Oh, man.
I'm not even sure what that means.
Oh, man.
The best, man.
Frank.
Oh, yeah. He nailed it.
That was outstanding,
bro.
I know.
That was outstanding.
I appreciate it. Thank you for that. Can I give a shout out to Michael Bernard?
Yeah.
He and I, we watch the show all the time. Good friend of mine. And we actually watch the show constantly and talk about it all the time. It's an amazing, it's a way we bond a lot of it, which is pretty cool.
Hey, I'm very appreciative. Frank sends me feedback all the time, tells me when I'm right and wrong, mostly when I'm wrong. But Frank, appreciate you doing this. But I'll be looking forward to Darnell coming back.
No, you stupid.
Can I throw some plugs out there for myself?
Absolutely.
Do it.
I'm going to be at the Improvs in Brea and Irvine coming up next few weeks, and a podcast to do with Al Jackson, Al and Frank Try to Be Serious, which actually was influenced by the show. It's outside of sports. We did talk a little bit of sports, but it's all about cultures and people listening to each other. And what was the phrase you coined, TJ, during the break? You said that was just
brilliant. Respectful arguments, disagreements.
Yes, respectful disagreements. And it was fantastic. It's exactly what we're trying for. When people don't think the same way as you, listen to them, and maybe you can come to a compromise. And if you don't, go away, walk away going, hey, we don't think the same way, but maybe we'll find something where we can get together on something else.
All right, so Frank is actually wearing my jersey from like 1988.
Unreal.
And I look at Frank in it, and I wonder how I ever got into it, particularly wearing pads. I can't even get into it now.
Golly. Without no shoulder pads.
Exactly. How much did you weigh back then? That's crazy.
I got to believe you sewed a couple of these together. There's no way. Did you put pillows in them first to out a little bit?
Crazy.
No way.
Well, thank you. Great job, Frank. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley joined now by NBA champion Matt Barnes. Time to play Hot Clock. Well, we'll each take 24 seconds to give our best hot take on some of the biggest stories in the NBA. All right, let's start with the Lakers. According to a report from Brian Windhorst, LA is already worried about whether 34-year-old LeBron James' long-term health is going to hold up. Marcellus, we'll start with you. Should concern about LeBron's health affect the Lakers' decision-making this offseason?
I don't know if there's real concern with LeBron's health as much as they're just trying to sell this to the next superstar who comes here. This could be your team. We do have concerns about LeBron's health. Dude has had perfect health for every single year of his career. And it's amazing when you get to a certain age, then all of a sudden, oh, we're so concerned. Why? Look at my history. Look at my body of work. It shows that I take care of myself, and this was just an anomaly. I think it's being exaggerated for the superstar
out there. That's pretty good.
I think it's a concern.
All right, hold on, Matt. Are we ready with the cock? All right, go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think it's a concern, but it's not a concern as far as attracting people. Obviously, LeBron's 34. He'll be 35 next year, but the mileage is of a 40-year-old, you know, with all the playoffs and all-star games, Olympics, all that kind of stuff. And I think more than anything, they just need to clean up management, clean up that locker room to attract a key free agent. Because right now, I mean, who really wants to go to a situation the way it is? And definitely shout out Lonzo Ball for doing his own thing, man. Happy for him.
Respect. You know what I got to say, Marcellus, you flipped me or you opened my eyes to an angle that's being played here in terms of selling the myth. If you're concerned about LeBron being so dominant on this team, his personality, toxic environment, you know what? We're going to put it out there through Brian Windhorst that, man, we're concerned.
Yeah.
We're looking for the true alpha. LeBron is on the back downside of his career. He'll be the number two. You'll be the number one. We're so concerned about LeBron's health. Mm-hmm. Great point. You flipped me there. But all right, to the Thunder.
Heavy lifting.
Who beat my Pacers last night and got an efficient game out of Russell Westbrook, who took just 15 shots. OKC is 27-11 when Russ shoots 20 times or less. Marcellus, do you think Russ will keep playing this way?
Absolutely. I respect how he plays the game. Like, look, it's an equalizer effect. If you ever seen an equalizer, some are up, some are down, some are in the middle. You got to know how to apply your knowledge and how to apply it efficiently to the game.
He's going to shoot less moving
forward. Yeah, he's been doing that all this season until the injury to Paul George. And then he said, look, I got to pick it back up until my boy gets back healthy again. I think we really undermine how he approaches the game. Dude's been averaging a triple-double for 3 years. He knows how to do it.
All right, Matt, you think Russell Westbrook will play this way in the playoffs?
I think less is more with Russ, and I think this year, more than any year, he's really showed his maturity as a player and as a man. He's really become a Robin to Paul George's Batman, and you saw that's OKC's success. Ooh. Right there. When Paul is scoring and Russ is distributing and doing all the other things, that's when they're at their best. Obviously, like he said, he had to pick his game up when Paul fell down and got injured, but now that Paul's back, I think
Westbrook sees himself as Robin.
He should. That's when they win.
That's when they're at the best.
I don't think he sees himself as Robin. I think he's like me and my diet. I go on great stretches for 2-3 weeks at a time, a month at a time, then I fall off a cliff. And that's what happened with Russell Westbrook. He fell off. He going great, shooting less.
Yeah.
Look how few calories I'm eating up during the game. Yeah. Then he fell off a cliff, man. He started snacking at night and started jacking up them shots. He's going to get into the playoffs. He gonna do Westbrook
in the playoffs again. You bet on
that. We'll see.
All right, to Kobe Bryant, who was asked by James Corden to rank himself, Michael Jordan and LeBron James, and shockingly, Kobe named himself the GOAT with MJ second and LeBron third. Marcellus, do you think Kobe really believes he's better than Michael?
Nah, and he told on himself too, because look, this was a brand play. This is Mamba mentality. I gotta say, I'm the GOAT. I'm the best. But dang, if it was really, truly from his core and he really believed it, he wouldn't have pump fake with it. He wouldn't have even thought about eating no damn cow tongue. Like, Kobe Bryant about to just eat some cow tongue because he doesn't want to say he's the best. So I think he got caught up in, am I going to project the truth or am I just going to speak from the heart? And he got caught up in the middle. But no, he doesn't think he's
Matt, does he believe he's the GOAT?
I think he does. And with just cause. I mean, it's crazy to me the argument the past couple years has been MJ and LeBron. Somehow Kobe continues to get hopped in that conversation. But to me, Kobe's right up there, if not 1-1-B. So I definitely think Kobe playing with them, playing against them. How not? How not?
You ever been to New York and got a fake Gucci bag? It's a knockoff. It looks just like the real
thing. You ain't even got to go to New York for that.
Kobe, yeah, right. You can go right down to Chinatown. Right, yeah. I definitely think Kobe believes that. And I think he hesitated because he realized this is going to be talked about for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Look, I told y'all in the last segment with Frank Caliendo that my role model was Mike Royko, and I'm trying to imitate Mike Royko. You'll never hear me say, I'm better than Mike Royko, when I'm just trying to be Mike Royko. Kobe Bryant spent his whole career trying to be Michael Jordan. Yeah. And now I'm supposed to believe he thinks he's better than Michael Jordan? His accomplishments ain't as good as Michael Jordan's. Not near the MVPs, one less championship, not as many scoring titles. He wasn't the alpha on some of his championship teams.
Ooh.
I ain't buying it.
Ooh, you had
all right, to Pat Riley, who says that Dwayne Wade was actually the best player in the world for about 3 years during Kobe's prime.
highlighted by Wade's 2006 NBA Finals MVP, Marcellus. Mm. Do you think Wade was ever really better than Kobe Bryant?
That's a tough one. I'm going to answer in Kobe's own words. When people were taking shots at Kobe, he said, you know what's amazing? My entire career I heard about Shaq, Duncan, McGrady, Iverson, LeBron. Everybody supposed to be better than me. But you know who the one guy that they all supposed to be better than is? Me. Kobe is the constant, the common denominator through all those eras. We're going to go back now, revisionist history, and dig for this? I'm not going there. Kobe was the guy.
Matt? Any truth to what Pat Riley's saying?
Not at all. I think he's just doing what he's supposed to do. I don't even think, and that's no knock on D-Wade. To me, D-Wade's probably the third best shooting guard of all time. He's always really kind of flown under the radar because he's just a player. You don't see any antics or any BS. He just goes out there and plays. But I think D-Wade knows that, you know, Kobe is Kobe, and I think Pat Riley's doing what he needs to say for D-Wade's farewell tour.
You know what? I may need a little extra time here.
Why?
Because in 2006, both of y'all, what, in your teens?
I was playing. Y'all don't even remember. He was killing. He killed in the finals.
But not just in the finals. That little 2005, 2006, there was a time, and I remember saying it myself, like, damn, D-Wade's the best. Mm. D-Wade, right? And again.
Just like when Dirk won it, everybody said he was the best?
No. But I think what Pat Riley's saying is just for a blip in time, a short one. He's not better than Kobe overall. Because you got to sustain.
He said 3 years.
Yeah.
He said 3 years. That ain't a blip. Yeah.
That's a blip.
That's a blip? Three years?
That doesn't mean he's better than Kobe overall.
His body of work, no. D-Wade's always been very talented.
Wave it off, that last comment. Wave it off.
All right, to the Knicks, who are praying for a big free agent this summer, and Bill Simmons thinks they'll get one, saying he would bet the house they'll land Kevin Durant. Marcellus, Bill Simmons got a good bet here, a bad bet?
And this is why Vegas keeps winning. That's a bad bet. You better not bet the house on this. Look, I got some intel that I can say, and there's some intel I can't say. Right. But guess what I do know? Clippers going to put their name in the hat. As Lakers going to put their name in. Like, there are real teams that have great situations. And the way that he keeps his middle finger to the sky, KD, he may want to come to the Clippers and say, I'm going to make this a great franchise. Or go to the Lakers and say, I'm going to be better than LeBron on his own team and win one. Ooh, watch
it. Matt, good bet or bad bet?
I understand the bet. Let's put it that way. You got to think, if you're a player that can go in and change the nature and the culture of the New York Knicks, you know, that's when you start talking about him up there with the greatest of all time. Management has always been terrible there, so that's why I don't know if he'll go there. I agree. I've heard a lot about the Clippers as well, so it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I don't know so much about the Lakers, but I definitely think after all this time, I think KD really may be on the move.
I think Bill Simmons has offered a provocative opinion and an informed one, but it's still a bad bet.
Yeah.
Because KD's too unpredictable, in my opinion. Mm. It's just like KD moves emotionally pretty frequently. And that's not, I'm not criticizing, I'm just observing. And so to think anything you hear about KD today will necessarily be true 2-3 weeks or 2 or 3 months from now, that's not a bet I'm making.
KD, Kyrie, and Zion, though?
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley here. Marcellus, I want to play You Said, where we look back at something you said yesterday that I had a strong reaction to. Take a listen.
But it's just the break. And it was something that was happening when I played, you know, Take Five. He just renamed Take Five. And now guys are going to go to social media, and we obviously know that the connotation in a workplace with social media means you're distracted. But at the same time, when I played, if we didn't take that five, those vets started to nod off.
All right, so I did a little research and discovered that another first-year head coach went down this path recently. Former 49ers head coach Jim Tomsula, who instituted social media breaks back in 2015. We all remember how his head coaching career turned out. Marcellus.
You went there, huh?
Honestly believe
a
social media break would be good for an NFL team.
You're not the only one did research. Have you ever heard of the Pomodoro technique? It's a 25-5 technique that they use in teaching and in classroom studies. Basically, intense work study for 25 minutes and then reward 5 minutes. Tomato, tomato, I don't understand why you got a reaction to this. It's either take five or it's a cell phone break. But if I say take five and you use your cell phone, why am I so disturbed as a coach, as an organization? This is what you need to do. Have those guys have intense focus for the time they're watching film And then just give them a little time to relieve.
Okay, and let's say they take this 5-10 minutes or whatever, hop on their social media, hop on their phones, and something there distracts them. Girlfriend, wife, mama, something over social media, and then they're bringing that energy back into the meeting room. What's the problem with going to work and just focusing on work?
Here you go. what's the athlete's greatest ability? Availability. What's their greatest attribute? Compartmentalized. You don't know how many times I had to go to practice, go to the games, traffic, got yelled at by the family. Oh, the tickets ain't there. You know what I do when I step between them whites? It's time to go to work. Athletes are conditioned to do that through our entire life and through our entire learning curve. So you can now say, I got to deal with that later, but it's time to go and watch this film.
Marcella, and you do this a lot of times. You relate everything to you. And do you ever...
and the Pomodoro technique.
Yeah, do you ever...
What?
Say, you know, not everyone's like me.
Right.
And then maybe I'm different. And so not everybody has that ability to compartmentalize. You didn't look around the locker room and see a lot of dudes that couldn't compartmentalize?
Yeah, but I also walked around the locker room and I played with Hall of Famers. Six. And at least three of them slept through a lot of meetings. Like, ugh. But they did their work. They found their way. I seen guys sitting up in the front of the classroom with an apple. Yes, coach. No, coach. Get out there and get smoked. So guys digest it a lot of different ways. I think he's trying to say, look, let me think about the lesser guy who can't hold it for a complete hour. He can only hold it for half an hour. I'm going to give this guy an opportunity to go out there.
Teaching to the idiots. I got it. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk through our approval ratings. And to give out his stupid award, Uncle Jimmy.
Oh, stupid, dumb award now.
Yeah. Uncle Jimmy, who are you?
Well, first of all, you can just call me Abraham Lincoln, all right?
I take it.
And I'm here to set you free.
Hey, wait a minute. It's been a minute.
All right, look here, man. Big dummy of the day, man. Big dummy of the day go to the person who quit playing John Madden yesterday because they couldn't get out of practice mode.
Over there, look at you.
Quit practice mode.
What? Two grown men playing video games. That was
no,
a good night.
Playing by himself and quit.
I'm gonna tell you this.
He used to that.
I get any more of these big dummies of the day, and we can have cousin Caliendo.
Oh.
Do the approval.
Oh. Rate.
All right.
Threats. You better give me some more t-shirts.
giving him jerseys. They paying him in jerseys.
From our discussion earlier about Lamar Jackson and John Harbaugh.
Oh man.
Abraham Lincoln popularized the cliche. Actions speak louder than words. Anyone who has the audacity to state the obvious about Jackson, he's a severely limited passer, and the black Tim Tebow, is shouted down as racist.
It's funny we're gonna put the indictment on a Lamar Jackson when in reality, who are we talking about that these receivers that don't wanna play with him? Those guys right there are not the top level receivers.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
So Abraham Lincoln said, actions speak louder than words.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Jimmy says, sticks hurt more than pillows, but they both can kill you.
Not bad, but what's your point?
And what's
my
a pillow?
My point, Merkulous.
Merkulous.
Words and actions are both meaningful and dangerous. My nephew, AKA Mr. Buffalo Butt over there,
book me.
He's trying to kill Lamar Jackson with words. That's an action, okay?
I'm not killing Lamar. I'm just trying to have an honest discussion.
Honestly, Jason, you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Calling Lamar the black Tebow, calling Lamar Jackson the black Tim Tebow, that's not racist. You know, Tim Tebow wishes he was good as Lamar. And if you had any type of Madden game about you, you know it.
You talking about that video game? Talk about that again.
Yes, I am, Merkulous.
Real serious with that. Huh?
Listen to me, bro. Lamar can't be stopped in Madden if you know what you're doing. And that's all Harbaugh telling y'all. Look, the Ravens know what they're doing with Lamar. That's all I'm saying. They have a system that works for Lamar. You don't need them big-name receivers when you're running that offense.
Lamar can't throw downfield, man. Stop it.
Bro, look. Look, Joe Montana couldn't throw down the field. Okay?
Oh, so now Lamar is Joe Montana.
Give him Jerry Rice when he came. Huh?
You said he didn't need big name receivers.
But what'd you say? Them is just words.
Oh.
You said, what'd you say about words? You said you don't believe in him, right? My actions are, I've been playing Madden in franchise mode with the Baltimore Ravens, and Lamar Jackson ain't nobody stop me. You got a PS4 now. Hey, bro, put your money where your mouth. Put your money where your mouth is. Okay? You got more than you got guts, so come on. Hey, boy, I bet you Lamar Jackson goes 4 score and 7 minutes to go. Y'all liked that, didn't you?
I did.
Y'all didn't know Uncle Jimmy Newton some of that Abraham Lincoln, did you? Lincoln the one to chop down the cherry tree, too. Y'all didn't think I knew that, did you?
Uh-huh. George Washington chopped down the
cherry tree. Yeah, that part.
Not Abe Lincoln.
No.
not in Kansas City school I went to. I don't know what the hell they teaching y'all.
Have you beat anybody in Madden other than somebody in practice mode? Have you beat anybody?
He did beat somebody yesterday. I saw him bragging about it on Twitter.
While you were trying to get George working?
Yeah, some young dude he put on blast yesterday. He's a pro. Right. I'm just trying to be young. I'm playing 2K mostly. All right.
Let me get to that.
And I ain't that good in 2K. But anyway, let me get to my John Harbaugh approval rating. First time we've ever done it. I'm going to give him a 20 job performance. He made the playoffs. He's won a Super Bowl, 18 all-time greatness. Character, I'm going to go 22. I got nothing on him.
Yeah.
Authenticity, I ain't buying it.
You ain't buying it?
No, I'm not buying it. I don't think he's all in on Lamar Jackson.
You said he told us too much, so you should be all in on him. That's what you said. That's authentic. Yeah.
72 role player.
Man, a Super Bowl champion.
No, all-star. I'm sorry, all-star.
Yeah, he's a GOAT because he's a Super Bowl champion coach that responded when they put the pressure on him.
Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he did, but you know what?
He a GOAT?
He ain't win it this way in terms of now he bet all in on a quarterback that you say can't even throw. And he's going all in on that. He's going to make it work with this. They were winning team with Lamar Jackson.